And I'll see you in a week. And remember, the Sisters in Spirit, October the 4th, and the panel on October the 2nd. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Radio Freethinker, and if you don't like the rain we've been having, well, you might as well be walking on the sun.
Recipe. This is a love attack. I know when our body's back, it's just like any fat. It retracts before impact, and just like fashion, it's a passion for the wicked and hip. If you got the goods, they'll come and buy it just to stay in the click. So don't delay, act now. Supplies are running out. Allow if you're still alive, 6 to 8 years to arrive, and if you follow the maid. And oppression, and together they took and they poked out with guitars around a bonfire, just singing and clapping. Man, what the hell happened? There's some was spellbound, some were hellbound, some they fell down, and some got back up and fought back against the meltdown. And their kids were hippie chicks, all hypocrites, because fashion is smashing the true meaning of it. So don't delay, act now. Supplies are
Hello and welcome to Radio Free Thinker on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. My name is Ethan, your free-thinking historian.
And I'm Don, your philosopher, political science guy.
And I'm Rob, cognitive psychologist and reader of banned books. This last week in September every year is Banned Books Week, put on by the American Library Association. So in honor of all those books that have been banned for content deemed inappropriate by conservative parents and religious institutions, go out and read a banned book this week.
Now, of course, speaking of banned books, I'm not sure, some books maybe deserve to be more banned or not. This weekend, a funny thing happened to me on the way to the forum. I ran into an anti-vax rally outside the art gallery downtown in Vancouver. They were sitting there and they were talking about how bad vaccinations. Actually, they were doing a very interesting thing. They were juxtaposing swine flu with vaccination. They were sitting there saying that the swine flu epidemic is a hoax, that if there is a swine flu out there, it's not dangerous. We don't really need to worry about it. And ironically enough, on that aspect, I don't think I find myself too far away from them at that point.
Yeah, I think the media frenzy over swine flu isn't merited given its actual dangerousness.
Not to suggest that it's a hoax. It is real.
It is real. It is dangerous. It's just not like, oh, crazy, we're all going to die.
Yeah. Exactly. And they were saying, you know, you don't need to get the swine flu vaccination. And again, I'm sitting saying, well, it's a valid debate. But then they take this next step. They're saying, stop all vaccinations. And I'm going, what?
What happened to all the steps in between?
Yeah, you know, so they're trying to use the wedge issue of the swine flu to promote, again, this idea that vaccinating your child is somehow putting your child at risk. They had a whole bunch of literature out there. They had the same thing where they spouted out all the different chemicals that can be found in some vaccines, including thimerosal, which, as everyone knows, is supposed to be mercury, which we also know has been taken out of all the major vaccines that are out there, at least in the Western world.
So they're citing, you know, old crap that's been debunked numerous times.
And a lot of this stuff is just demonstrates a lack of understanding of how vaccines work. They list antibodies and adjuvants as bad things, which actually make vaccines work and are beneficial to us.
Antibodies help us not die when we have infections.
So, and they also list some egg protein, tissue from aborted human or animal fetuses, aluminum gels, Live or dead viruses. Yes, that's how they work.
Exactly. Now, for those people out there who don't know how vaccines work, there's actually two styles of vaccinations. There's live vaccines and dead vaccines. The idea of both of them is actually to give you a small version of the disease so your body builds up antibodies. Now, the idea is you're going to get a little bit sick from the, because again, you're getting the disease, but you're getting it in a very mild, small thing. So you build up antibodies. And there's no way, or next to no way, that you can ever get a full-flung disease out of this. So when the real disease hits you, you're prepared for it.
Yeah, the fact that you get a stuffy nose, you know, fever and the other flu symptoms, that means that your immune system is working.
Exactly. It's kind of like giving your body the blueprints to the disease. Even in the case when you get a live one, it's usually been on the genetic level, defanged, to use a euphemism. And the ones with the, and you would never get like a live version of polio or something. It was always like the seasonal flu. It's never a very, very dangerous virus. Like, oh, let's just give them this.
Well, and again, I mean, they're engineered to give you, again, a mild form of the disease. If they gave you the full disease, then you'd have massive epidemics of people getting sick from this. And it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Right? But
what does happen is the increase in, you know, kids who get and die of the measles in places like the UK, where anti-vaccination movements have been around for a longer time.
Well, that was a funny thing. Not me, but a friend of mine was asking for evidence and said, oh, we've got all these scientific studies. And the only studies they could ever bring up was someone wrote a book about 10 years ago. We all know about the discredited studies done in the 80s. But every time he said, well, give me some scientific study. And he said, oh, there's lots of studies. Let me tell you about this one case. And he said, no, I don't want to know anecdotes. I want to know studies. He says, oh, all right, okay. Well, let me tell you about this other person. And every time they kept bringing it down to anecdotal evidence. And it is true that one in a million people might actually have a bad reaction to vaccinations. I would never say there's zero risk, but relative to the gain, it's next to none. And if you go by anecdotal evidence, who knows? A lot of diseases hit young children. A lot of illnesses become, like autism, becomes apparent in children about 6 months to 2 years.
Yeah, as they age, it becomes more apparent, and that happens to coincide with the normal vaccination schedule. So it's putting two and two together. It's false. It's not the right logic to go with, but it does happen.
And unfortunately, anecdotal evidence, the evidence of one person, you know, an eyewitness account, is really convincing to us, and it really shouldn't be in cases like this.
Yeah. Well, speaking of anecdotal evidence, or maybe we should go to a commercial break and come back with some more information about global warming / climate change.
Well, there was one more thing just before we go I wanted to bring up on this. Now, one of the things I ended up doing when I discovered this rally is I actually protested the rally myself. Because I think, as we've mentioned before on this show,
you made a sign and you went up and started yelling?
Well, I did start to yell.
Oh.
And I made a and I tried to promote a rational scientist. I tried to counter the crap that they were doing. Now, as we've mentioned on the show before, the anti-vax, there are a lot of things. If you're religious or not, there's a lot of things that can or cannot be good or bad. But the anti-vax movement kills people. And I think this is one of the issues that we can actually make a difference. Now, I'm not exactly sure. And when we find out, they're planning on having another rally, I believe, in October. And hopefully we can get people going out there who can counteract these misinformation they're promoting. We may not shout them down, but we'll be there perhaps to provide counter information, rational scientific information.
We'll put some more information on our webpage about this and how to organize a good counter protest to this. So now do we have consensus to go to commercial? Okay.
Yeah, this is Mickey Fitz in the business. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. Keep the faith.
And we're back on Radio Free Thinker. So,
speaking of consensus,
yes, actually, the other day I was listening to an episode of CBC's show Ideas. It was actually a July episode.
It's a good show. People should listen to it.
In general, you know, it had this. It was focusing on a book called The Deniers, the world-renowned scientists who stood up against global warming hysteria, political persecution, and fraud. Written by Lawrence Solomon, a conservative columnist for the National Post. Now, the idea of this, it's almost, it reminded me so much of the movie about evolution with Ben Stein in it.
Expelled.
How he's saying, you know, there are scientists out there who deny the scientific consensus. There is no scientific consensus, and they're hunted down.
So the book was full of scientists being misquoted or something like that?
Well,
because as I recall, Expelled was full of that.
Well, it's odd, actually. He brings up a lot of scientists who question some aspects of global warming. But ironically enough, if you look into 90% of the people on there agree with the idea of global warming, even agree to a certain extent of the dangers of it, but they have some questions about the actual mechanics. And again, it's one
of those things. So the specifics. They agree that global warming happens, but as to the specifics of it, minor details about how it happens and what the actual levels are, they don't.
Exactly. It reminded me so much of how a lot of creationists will criticize evolution by saying, well, even the scientists don't agree on how evolution works, therefore evolution can't be real, because some of the mechanics, they disagree on some of the mechanics, some of the different information. I actually came with a list of some of the main quote-unquote controversies that he brings up in his books, and explains how, one, he misuses them, and two, the scientifically recognized way of dealing with this here. One of the ones he mentions, it's called the hockey stick controversy. Now, in the late 1990s, a scientist named Michael Mann, thank you, released a study of the temperatures of the last 2,000 years, and it showed on that almost a straight line up until the end of the 20th century where it's
it goes up, so it looks like a hockey stick lying on the ground.
So it looks like a hockey stick. Now, this became one of the main selling points of the global warming campaign. Now, of course, scientists, being scientists, trust nobody. And they go back and say, well, let me see if I can repeat this or whatever, right? And they went back, and it was true. Some of this, the data that was used, because we don't actually have thermometers going back 2,000 years, so some of the things we used were proxies, tree ring growth, etc.
Ice cores, that type of stuff?
That type of thing. So some of them were proxies for gaps where they didn't actually have temperatures. And some of the methodology, you know, it was the first time this kind of project was done. So scientists went back, and they found that some of the data wasn't quite as the straight line of the hockey stick wasn't really straight line. There are some things that future studies have come up and have corrected. They've got a better understanding of the proxy data, the better methodology, and they account for such things like in the Middle Ages there was a little ice age, right? So now the stick of the hockey stick is a little wobbly, but all of them still agree that there's this huge upturn in the last 100 years that coincides with CO2 thing. So again, this Lawrence Sullivan took a genuine controversy, because scientists said, well, we're not sure the data's right, misinterpreted, say, therefore the whole thing must be wrong, and totally ignored the fact that all the new reinterpretations of the data still show the huge increase in temperature in the late 20th century.
Is that common with denialists? I mean, there's this one guy, Lawrence Solomon. Do you know of...
Well, again, I can think of another thing, is when they use the correlation with smoking and cancer. Right, you know, they're sitting there, and the same statistical manipulation was used to say, well, you know, you can't be 100% sure about X, Y, or Z, you know, were the confounding factors, therefore none of it can be right. Whereas you go, if you smoke, you have a 90% chance of dying of cancer. Even if there are confounding issues, you still can't ignore this correlation.
What about ice melting in Antarctica? Surely they can't be denying that.
Well, it's funny you mention that, because that's another thing that brings up. Now, there's actually two aspects to this. In Antarctica, there is land ice and there is sea ice. Now, a study done by Peter Doran noted in early 2000 that some areas of the continent of Antarctica apparently are getting colder. And this was latched on by the famous writer Michael Crichton in a book, actually, called, State of Fear, where he points out that global warming can't be true, because if the globe was warming, how can the Antarctic be getting colder?
We could point out that Michael Crichton is one of those big conspiracy theory, government is trying to trick us guys.
Michael Crichton is to global warming what I think the Pope would be to atheism. So, I mean, you couldn't get much more against the whole idea. But ironically enough, the Peter Dorian came out in 2006, and he wrote, he says, you know, our results were misused as evidence against global warming by Michael Crichton. He went out and he said, listen, I did the study, I know what it meant, and this guy misinterpreted everything he did. He actually goes out to point that the reason why the Antarctic was getting colder, one, there is the idea that even if the globe in general gets warm, climate is a very complex thing.
Yeah, that's why the term has been changed to global climate change as opposed to global warming, because it sort of spawns this inaccurate perception of what's
happening. Parts of the world will get colder as a result of climate change, as opposed to not every place is just going to get hotter and hotter and hotter.
Exactly. But another thing he points out, and again, I find the irony so great, he says one of the reasons why the Antarctic was getting colder and it stopped getting colder is because of the ozone. The depletion of the ozone, the hole in the ozone layer, caused greater radiation of Earth's heat out of the atmosphere at that particular point. And as we realize that man caused the ozone hole, and we are correcting that issue with the ban on CFCs, that the hole is
closing.
Remember
that whole thing back in the 90s?
and the hole is closing, and therefore the Antarctic is going to warm up like most everywhere else. Now, the other big issue they bring up is sea ice growth. They say, well, actually, you know, glaciers are melting all across the world, but sea ice in the Antarctic is growing. And that's true. Actually, there is more. But as I said before, climate is a very complex thing. And one of the things that causes that'll happen is with more warmth, more water in the atmosphere. That water eventually precipitates out, because again, global warming might rise at a few degrees, but we're not talking the tropics in the Antarctic or anything. So it snows more, and you get more sea ice because of this increased precipitation cycle. So
You can't actually see this for yourself. I think Google just released an app or something that lets you look at the levels and precipitation of Greenland, the Arctic Circle. You can Google that, and I think we'll put it up in our show notes.
You know, and that shows, I mean, the whole idea, I mean, we're talking about modeling here, right? And I mean, some models will vary, right? I mean, one of the extreme ones is the whole idea that because of global warming, the Northern Europe will actually turn into a much colder place, because as the Greenland ice sheets melts, which it is melting, will cause a shutdown of the Gulf Stream. And the Gulf Stream brings warm water up to Northern Europe, causing Europe to be a lot warmer than it should be. But another criticism they have is the models. And he says, well, you know, you can't trust the models. One of the quotes I remember hearing is that, you know, the weathermen can't tell you what the temperature is going to be like tomorrow, so why should you trust what they say about 100 years from now?
I heard that exact quote today. I was reading a blog by Michael Shermer. I think the funny thing is, though, is the weatherman might say that it's going to be sunny on Sunday, but it turns out it's, you know, pouring rain. But sometimes he says it's going to be sunny, it turns out it's blistering hot. So they can be wrong both ways. They can say it's going to be bad, it could be worse.
Well, and also, too, it's conflicting the two different things. I mean, you're talking about a very specific event. Now, if you take a look at climate modeling, or your meteorologist, and he says, well, you know, as the year goes along, in the middle of the year, it's going to start getting warmer. And then as you start getting into October, November, it's going to get colder. Probably going to get really cold in January and February. Again,
this sounds familiar.
But the point is, I mean, even if you can't predict the temperature of any one day, that doesn't mean you can't predict trends, averages. I mean, that's a lot of how statistics work.
Yeah, and these models are not short-term, like weather prediction. They're
definitely
long-term.
Not. They're not the same technology we use to predict if it's going to rain tomorrow. This is a bit more high-tech than that.
You know, and the thing is when the first models came out, you know, they were not accurate. You know, they were generalizations. They gave rough things, but the models have improved so much. I mean, as we start correlating results with past, one of the things they do is they take the models and they go and predict past temperatures and see how that works. Now, the funny thing is that all these old models, all the new models, still predict this great increase in global warming. If anything, in fact, I was reading just the other day that a lot of the latest models used are actually showing that global warming is increasing, that if anything, the inaccuracies of the old models we're being too conservative. If anything, we're getting into a worse condition than we were before. And one of the reasons why we know this is kind of happening is another aspect they keep bringing up. They say, well, it has nothing to do with man-made chemicals, nothing to do with that. It's all to do with the sun and solar cycles. And ironically enough, the sun does have a large effect on our thing. And if you ever look at a lot of these climate deniers, I'm going to call them climate deniers, they will show that the increase in temperature coincides with increased solar activity. But the maps almost always end in the 80s. And why do they end in the 80s? Because after the 80s, sun activity starts to decrease. That's the downside of a cycle. Cycles go up and they go down. That's the way they work.
Yet climate change in a negative trend is increasing.
The temperature still is increasing. And if anything, we're seeing an odd sort of thing that maybe temperatures would be a heck of a lot warmer than they are now if it wasn't for the fact that there are these cooling factors on it.
So it seems that it exists, that there's consensus that it exists, even if the way the details work is in a, what can we do about it when we turn?
We'll take a little closer look at that.
The CRTC is asking the public for comments as part of a nationwide review of campus and community radio. That review includes this station. We're asking that you let the CRTC know what local, nonprofit, volunteer-driven radio means to you and your community. Maybe you're a fan of community radio. Maybe you've donated. Or maybe you're a volunteer. Then please write to the CRTC and make sure you tell them you support the idea of stable funding for the sector. To submit your comments, visit the website crtc.notlong.com and look for review number 418, the review of campus and community radio. The last day for comments is Friday, October 16th.
And we're back on Radio Free Thinker. So, Rob, what were you going to tell us about the latest on global warming, climate change?
So, everyone sort of has the idea that in order to mitigate climate change, we need to reduce our emissions of greenhouse gases. But what if that isn't enough? Recently, the Royal Society published a report. This was published actually on the 1st of September on radical new proposed solutions to the climate crisis. And I'm quoting from one of the head researchers that was involved in this report. Unless the world community can do better at cutting emissions, we fear we will need additional techniques such as geoengineering to avoid very dangerous climate change in the future. However, we are not advocates of geoengineering. Our opinions range from cautious consent to very serious skepticism about these ideas. And so the idea of geoengineering is massive-scale projects that will in some way change the climate or affect it to reduce the problems associated with global warming and emissions, greenhouse gases.
So is this like taking some ice cube from the asteroid belt and slamming it into the Earth's ocean to cool us off? I saw that once on Futurama. Is that what they're planning?
That's probably one of the more radical solutions. I've actually remember hearing one about creating a massive fake volcano that shoots soot into the atmosphere when this is supposed to help mitigate climate change somehow.
Yeah, that won't have any adverse consequences.
actually, I think that was promoted by the Dry Cleaners of America.
But actually, the report looked at two main categories of geoengineering. The first one was reflecting a small amount, about 2% of solar radiation, in an attempt to reduce the effect of solar radiation on global temperature increase. Proposal I've heard that has been shown to be rather effective in doing this sort of reflection is to take everyone's roofs and paint them white. And this helps. This actually, you know, if enough people do this, painting our roofs white will reflect enough solar radiation that it can keep the temperature from rising too much while we continue to reduce our emissions. The second, and according to the Royal Society, more promising method was to directly remove greenhouse gases from the atmosphere. And the most promising that they were looking at was to suck carbon dioxide directly out of the atmosphere. One of the more promising pieces of research in this was from a guy at Columbia University in New York who basically designed artificial trees that take CO2 out of the atmosphere and convert it into, you know, oxygen or usable power or what have you.
Out of curiosity, why would they use artificial trees as opposed to real trees? I notice that's one of the things that often these climate deniers point out, is that, you know, you CO2 is good for the atmosphere, plants like it, and you're using artificial trees to...
Because there is way more than there should be. I mean, you know, we have increased greenhouse gases in our atmosphere far more than has ever been in history, as sort of indicated by that hockey stick graph. And
human history.
Yeah, yes, yes, human history. And there's not a lot that the trees that we have right now can do. So unless we drastically increase the amount of trees on the planet, you know, by planting them, there's going to be some problems. Now, what's interesting is that the report notes that global warming will likely have an increase of about 2 degrees Celsius this century unless emissions are cut by 50% or more of the 1990 measurement levels by 2050, and that we should continue reducing our, you know, greenhouse emissions and do research into geoengineering as a sort of backup plan. But lobbyist groups that are noted for their climate change denialism are spinning geoengineering as a possible solution. So I think you have something, Ethan, to say about deniers of global...
Well, I did read a blog today by Michael Shermer, editor-in-chief of Skeptic Magazine, and I would never suggest that he's a denier of global warming, but I do think he's taking it a bit too lightly. He points out that by 2100, we will see an increase of global temperature by 4.7 degrees Fahrenheit and a sea level rise of about a foot, and he considers this a moderate change. Moderate, yes. And
moderate compared to, you know, stuff that we haven't even thought about before, really.
Well, this is a quote that he wrote about this moderate change. He states, 400,000 more heat-related deaths annually. However, there will be also 1.8 million fewer cold-related deaths for a net gain of 1.4 million lives. Maybe that's Shermer's sense of humor there. I don't know. But that completely ignores issues like the droughts that are going to arise, the less arable land for growing food, so the starvation is going to be extremely high. And I would point out, too, that he mentions how global warming, reducing CO2 emissions, has often been ranked very low by think tanks, by the UN, or, for example, the Copenhagen Consensus, which was an organization of scientists and Nobel laureates ranking the big problems and what we should spend our money on. And he ranked CO2 emissions 16th out of 17th, the top four being controlling HIV/AIDS, fighting malnutrition, free trade to attenuate poverty, and battling malaria. However, all of these things will be affected by global warming and the rise of CO2 emissions. So I don't quite see how claiming that it's a waste of money to combat this, you know, I mean, that, maybe that's coming from his libertarian views.
And actually, that's something that I found here. There's a lot of libertarian and sort of neocon think tanks, groups with a long history of climate denialism and what one person called carbon profiteering, which is, you know, the more emissions they make in their industry, the more money they make. The things like the Cato Institute, American Enterprise Institute, you can look all these guys up. And it seems like they're helping and hoping to undermine emissions reduction because it's profitable for them by latching onto the sort of last resort backup plan of geoengineering and hawking it as the main event and sort of downplaying the actual, you know, reality of global climate change and how much reducing carbon emissions can actually help.
You know, it's funny, actually, especially when you were talking there about the number of people who would die from heat stroke versus the number of people who freeze to death. Another thing that he probably hasn't even factored in is the idea that how much energy is wasted on air conditioning and such things like that, and how one of the big things that they found when it comes to conservation is the whole idea that warmer temperatures actually will tend to cause more energy consumption, partly because we're good at insulating our houses as far as making cooling heat in, but we tend to be less good when it comes to keeping hot out.
Exactly. Well, we're running out of time here.
This is a very large topic.
Yes. I encourage our listeners to please email us if you have any thoughts or criticisms for our arguments, radio.com. radio.freethinker@gmail.com. And please check out our website, radiofreethinker.com. You can read all our blogs and check out our show notes. And I would like to remind our listeners that Sam Singleton, the atheist evangelicalist, is going to be in Vancouver on Wednesday, October the 21st at the Metrotown Station Square pub. You can Google that, get the Facebook event, and go to it because it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and my skeptic highlight for the week here is a talk going on called The Private Clinic Threat to Medicare. It's put on by the BC Health Coalition. It's Thursday, October 1st at 6:30 p.m. at the Vancouver Public Library. It's very good to see how our health system compares to the United States and why some people want to destroy ours in favor of what the Americans have because it's so good.
And tomorrow is International Blasphemy Day, put on by the Center for Inquiry, and it's also associated with a contest for the best piece of blasphemy. And this is to encourage questioning religion, which historically has been the unquestionable institution. So tomorrow, deny the Holy Spirit and be forever damned, as it is the only unforgivable sin, according to the Bible.
Okay, well, this is Ethan, your free-thinking historian, saying thank you, listeners, for making us the fifth most subscribed show on CITR.
And here's to more subscribers.
Exactly. I guess this is Don saying eyes open, minds on.
And this is Rob saying good night and see you at Skeptics in the Pub.
Bye, everybody.
It's our pledge drive here on NPR, and we have a 20-minute field recording of a tumluku, which is a Bosnian instrument which can only be played when you have a pierced scrotum and three kids who have been killed by a landmine. It's unlistenable radio! You understand me?
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. Totally listenable radio.
I stopped trying to define punk around the same time I stopped trying to define Islam. They aren't so far removed as you'd think. Both began in tremendous bursts of truth and vitality that seem to have lost something along the way. The energy, perhaps. It comes with knowing the world has never seen such positive force and fury and never would again. Both have suffered from sellouts and hypocrites, but also from true believers.
Parallel. Now I'm coming out my shell. I put you in a spell, and you can't even tell. I stay hungry like I'll be hearing the dinner bell. I say you know it flies hell. As far as I can tell, there ain't no parallel. Now I'm coming out my shell. I put you in a spell, and you can't even tell. I stay hungry like I'll be hearing the dinner bell ring.
Golden embryo shining in the void. Oh, boundaries dissolve into resonant points. 10 or 11 joints, then I should be even. Veil of illusion inebriated in a being. 23 got that good shit. When the clay buffalo walks into the sea, there are no footprints. Dope music, promotional solar plexus. Go to it with a flow that's so relentlessly ill. When you hear it, you have to dance. A lion's cub should not chase an